news and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Welcome one and all once again to the Webcomic Beacon newscast. This is episode 25, the newscast for June 19th, 2011. I'm your host, Ross Scott. My stuff can be found at systemcomic.com. It's a little webcomic called The System. It's awesome. With me on the show today, as always, is Fess of PSIwebcomic.com, behind the scenes, making everything happen. Unfortunately, Alex cannot be with us here today. She has a case of the boogie-woogie blues. I'm not exactly sure. But unfortunately, for her, but fortunately for all of us, and for himself as well, joining us today is the man behind the scenes who is collecting our articles every week, Eric from Exern, which is EXIERN.com. Hey, Eric. How are you?
Hey, Ross.
yeah. All right. Quick note. We had a Super Art Fight last night here in D.C. Good turnout, too. So I'm happy to say that the comics world is alive and well here in D.C., which is good to know. Though I did miss the tiny comics convention that was apparently at George Mason this weekend, but... Oh, well. All right. How was your guys' weeks?
Pretty good.
Yay.
Nothing exciting to report. I didn't go to... I wanted to go to Super Art Fight, but wasn't feeling well, so I didn't make it.
You missed some amazing burlesque. which is why it was amazing. Yeah, it's great. I mean, there was comics, and then there was boobs, and then there was comics, and then there was boobs.
Oh, well.
So, boobs in the comics, I mean, it was just everywhere.
Interesting.
So,
good times.
Sounds like a good combination.
I had a going-away party yesterday for Jillifu, who has joined the Navy. And we're going to have her on today, actually, on the Webcomic Beacon to talk about watercoloring.
All right. And are you guys in the Ustream feed, or are we doing the Ustream feed today?
I do have the Ustream up, and I sent out a couple of tweets, but...
That means I can send out a couple of tweets. All right, well, we're going to dive right into these stories. For this week, as we do every week, we will start out with a story of drama, intrigue... and
mystery.
Rapists.
All right.
So let's see where to start with this brilliant article. This was all over the internet this week, especially amongst creators. Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, really knows how to put his foot in his mouth, as he has been posting on his blog all about it's so painful. Oh my god.
He's posting that, I mean, here's the thing. He posted a statement about how all men in their nature are rapists, sort of thing. And
here's a good way to put it. He takes an okay idea that when not put, like, okay idea meaning I see his point, but man, does he screw it up. And you have, yes. Like, you would really have to nail how you're going to say it if you're trying to make this point. And instead, he fumbles it horribly and makes him look like more of a jerk. And considering that any news about him that we've had to follow over the course of the last, forever, has been about him putting his foot in his mouth, it really just gets stacked on top of a pile of horrible things he said. In this case...
Yeah.
If a lion and a zebra show up at the same watering hole and the lion kills the zebra, whose fault is that? Maybe you say the lion is at fault for doing the killing. Maybe you say the zebra should have chosen a safer watering hole. But in the end, you probably conclude that both animals acted according to their natures, so no one is to blame. However, This is at your local zoo. You might have some questions about who put the lions and the zebras in the same habitat. Now consider human males. No doubt you have noticed an alarming trend in the news. Powerful men have been behaving badly, e.g. tweeting, raping, cheating, and being offensive to just about everyone in the entire world.
Wiener.
The current view of such things is that the men are to blame for their own bad behavior. Seems right. Obviously, we shouldn't blame the victims. I think we all agree on that point. Blame and shame are society's tools for keeping things under control. And then he goes on and basically says that it's in the nature of all men to do such things.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. And the thing that struck me is South Park said very similar things when the Tiger Woods scandal came out. You know, it was, you know, guys like sex, and if given the opportunity to have sex with many women, there is a part of a man that says, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And this is what he's trying to get at, but he just fails in getting it across. And sort of sounds like he's blaming society for not letting men go out and rape and pillage, apparently.
Of course, I should say he does not explicitly say those exact words, but the inference is there. I mean, not to mention, I don't know, thousands of years of evolution, millions of years of evolution, however long people have been here, that we've learned to control our baser instincts.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Okay, this is his own website. Obviously, he can say whatever he feels like on his blog. He's previously said some things that he's taken down because they have come under scrutiny. In this case, this post has negative 1,391 votes on it, which means that many people voted it down. And if anyone voted it up, they then got voted down. You know, outvoted. So over 1,000 people have voted this way down, way, way down. And it's got comments galore, 125 comments on it. Now, let's look at this from a creator's perspective. Should he be posting things like this? Should stuff like this be kept up once it's caused a stir? Should any comment be made after posting something like this? Or does life just go on and that's five less Dogbert plushies for him to sell?
Is it five less or is it five more? I mean, this is always the thing.
I don't know.
We
I don't
talk
know.
About because we know that you can make a career out of being an ass. That we know this works and that negative publicity gets you viewers just as much as positive publicity because if everyone's talking about you, everyone says, let's go check out what this guy's about. You know, it's that same...
Does Dilbert have that issue, though? I mean, this is Dilbert. Like, he's achieved whatever it was he was trying to achieve in terms of business plan a while ago.
He's trying to see if he can ruin it all.
Yeah, well, no.
I don't even know. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish anymore.
Well, no, I think he's at the point in his career, and he's wealthy enough that he says, "I don't care." You know, I honestly think he's just he feels he's speaking his mind. He later followed up with a comment that, you know, he writes his blog for Dilbert readers who are more intelligent than your ordinary readers. basically saying, you guys are idiots that you missed my point.
So this has led to a lot of people kind of dissecting Dilbert, the comic, not the character necessarily, and saying, okay, well, here's a comic strip with one female character sometimes, and mostly a bunch of guys running around and saying that, you know, it's kind of a sexist comic.
Yeah. I mean, and I think this is probably not a good place to be. I think, you know, it's not good to be branded as sexist or racist. That doesn't help your following, although Mel Gibson still gets movies. But it's one of those things negative publicity is just as good as positive publicity. Just people yell a lot.
Just as good.
Maybe. Well, you have to be popular before you do that.
Yeah.
Is it just as good as positive? I don't know if I could go that far. But
okay.
You know, I can't believe this. Dilbert's been running for 20 years, you guys. 20 years of being in the papers. Ugh, I mean, I don't even. That's not even a discussion point. That's just me being a little depressed. Okay. Well, this has been an interesting story. Obviously, there's been a lot of articles on it. I've seen it in a million places. Daily Cartoonist was kind enough to cover it as well. There's plenty more information about that out there for those interested. Also, there will be a link to the original blog post as long as it remains up on Scott Adams' site over at our website at the Webcomic Beacon. So you can do exactly what's wrong with this world, which is go watch the train wreck happen. All right.
And if it ever comes down, it'll likely be archived on 4chan somewhere.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God. For the epic lulls. Ugh. All right. We'll move on to the next story. This entire newscast just feels about as hungover as I feel. It's just funny. Like, the news itself looks hungover. all right. So, now on to some tidbits. We have some tech news. Now, we've covered a lot about readers, your bit.lys, and I mean not your bit.lys, I'm sorry, your Graphically's and what have you. Well, Graphically has just stepped forward announcing a new redesign that will shift the focus of their current structure a little bit. They started out saying that they wanted to be the iTunes of comics, and they're now shifting that to a lot more of a community feel. They're trying to bring in more of a community. And they say via this article on Comic Book Resources that they're trying to encourage things like commenting and sharing and that sort of thing through their app and through their new website. So have you guys had a chance to check this out?
I took a look at some of what they're doing. I mean, it's incredibly kludgy in the fact that they want to encourage sharing without actually allowing you to share.
Right.
And so it's...
As they do in this article, Atomic Robo number one is awesome. Here is a big widget that shows you Atomic Robo number one. All you get is the cover... Wait. No, I'm sorry. You get more than just the cover. I'm clicking through it here. And you do actually get to read some of it.
Yeah.
First few pages. I mean, that's
first few pages, yeah.
That's
fine. Not the whole thing, but you at least get a pretty good preview.
Yeah.
And so Atomic Robo is awesome, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean,
so you get a few pages of it.
Yeah, but that's we know that's not enough to really get into a comic. I mean, if I was with a friend who was into comics and he wanted to share a comic that he really liked, he'd give me like three issues of it, you know, right. So I could really get into it. And he would hand over the books, I'd read them, and I hand them back. That's sharing. I mean, that's sharing. It's not, this is an ad. It's a nice ad, but I would feel cheated if one of my friends said, "Hey, I wanted to share this comic book," and they gave me three pages torn out of the comic book. I go, "What are you doing?" Well, you have to go buy the rest yourself.
this okay. So this when they say share in this context, they don't mean share the whole thing. They don't mean lending, kind of sharing. Yeah. They mean here is the article I am discussing in this blog post. Here's a widget. So it's kind of like embedding a YouTube video. Only instead of being able to embed a whole video, you embed a little section. But that's kind of like, let's say you're doing a review for a movie and you put, say, the movie trailer into the post, right. You know, with it. I think it's a reasonable to show and give away.
I think it's reasonable. I don't think it's there yet. And I think it's yet again this problem that of the fear of someone stealing your comic book, because if I'm talking about Atomic Robo and I think page 25 is really awesome, I can't show page 25. There is no way for me to link to page 25. And if you look at movie reviewers, they don't show the trailer. They show the pieces of the movie they're talking about. Now, there's a bit of an understanding between movie reviewers and the movie studios that they don't show the entire movie in their review. It's one of these things where I get the feeling graphically you're saying, we're giving you the...
Somewhere.
Go ahead.
But movie reviewers need to get their clips from somewhere.
Right.
And they're generally getting them from places that have it pirated or whatever. And sometimes they get... The big places get permission for that kind of things. And the small places tend to have their video clips getting taken down.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, professional movie reviewers get it from the studio. They say, we want to show this page, this part of the movie, and the studio gives it to them. And I get the feeling graphically is saying, we're allowing you the opportunity to advertise our comic for us. Isn't that great? And I'm like, no, that's great for you. But for me, it's like.
So the other big shift that they're making, though, that they talk about in this article, is that they're making a shift to trying to open up to more types of creators. So there is a possibility that we could start seeing a lot more independent creators, a lot more people like us, the small press of the internet or actual small press people on Graphically, which could be a real boon. I mean, it's kind of like we were saying about Kickstarter last week, where why not tap into getting more of an audience and also, go through that payment structure as opposed to only going through your own audience? Couldn't there be a case be made for, using this kind of thing to your advantage and getting on their community? I mean, as far as all of these apps go, these big comic reading community app things that are trying to sprout up, I think Graphically is the one that's been trying to reach out to independents the most so far.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing. I mean, if we're gonna have the opportunity to advertise for them, I want a little bit of referral incentive if somebody ends up buying said comic through this widget I put up.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the Amazon system.
Yeah.
That would you can put an Amazon widget on your page and you can get money for people buying things through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a very, very neat idea. They are trying. They're not quite there yet, but they're trying. And they are trying more than the other apps, which basically say Marvel and DC are the future, and you guys just go away.
I'm right with you, Eric. I mean, these guys seem to be trying the hardest to include others in a way that the other apps just aren't doing right now. So hopefully, they'll get this figured out, and we'll all be happily reading our comics in the way everyone's happy to read them in the future. So with that, we'll move on to our next article. And this one comes to us via Comics Reporter. And it's news that the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is joining forces, with booksellers, artists, the ACLU, and others to stop a Utah law that prevents freedom of speech on the internet. That some people might consider, quote, harmful to minors, unquote.
Yeah. Utah passed a law saying that if you put something on the internet that's harmful to minors, you're breaking Utah law. Which is, I mean, it's insane.
We have Utah, right? I mean, this is why Utah exists as a state. So we can take all of these people and put them in one place really conveniently.
Yeah, it's it's a little crazy, but it's also a little scary that some place within the United States would think that's a good idea.
In other news, this is why I don't go to Utah.
Yeah, this is a law that China is saying, whoa, dudes, that's a little too far. So they're fighting this. Hopefully this will get shut down. It's always a problem when you have this thing called the internet where you literally can get access to any information, because if you want to protect your children, there's some information you don't want them to have, and it's hard to keep that from them. But
I mean, if they implemented some sort of statewide, like, net granny and something like
people
that,
would start moving out of Utah so fast.
I don't think so. I think the people in Utah are there for a reason.
There's a reason they don't live everywhere else.
Yeah. It's the promised land.
All right. Well, anyway.
Not everyone in Utah is crazy. Just certain lawmakers are.
Well, Scott Johnson of Extra Life Radio lives in Utah, and I don't think he's crazy.
No.
Much.
No. I have plenty of people from Utah are very reasonable. There is a strong religious right lobby there that gets this stuff passed through.
And luckily, on the other side, we have people like the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund also kind of keeping it real for us.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, if you want to... Comic Book Legal Defense Fund always could use a hand. Please visit their website, and if you get a chance, give them a hand, because they are looking out for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're going to have to defend me one of these days.
I would like to get these people on the show at some point.
God, they're just awesome. Now, if them and the EFF ever team up on something, I might just lose it. They could take on Kingpin. I don't know. Something. Maybe Dr. Doom. I don't know. Be an epic show. All right. The next article, a quick one. There's a Tron Legacy webcomic that uses HTML5, you guys, and is kind of a demo for Internet Explorer 9. And basically, it's a motion comic, but done with HTML5 and not video and not Flash, and is therefore kind of cool and stuff. Do you guys have a chance to take a look at it?
Yeah, it's a motion comic that isn't irritating. I mean, that's the thing.
One way of putting it.
You know, a lot of these motion comics, you have to sit while the animation plays itself out. You know, it's like, yeah, fine. You move their arms slightly.
From the motion comic. Sorry.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You
have to sit and wait for it to play out. This gives you a lot of control. It doesn't interrupt the story. You can power through it as if you're reading a normal comic. You can skim. It looks cool.
It does.
And it doesn't interrupt the reading of the comic. So it is really nice in that respect.
But at the same time, it takes time to load. You have to go page by page. It's hard to jump ahead or back if you maybe didn't finish reading something. So it's kind of a one-trick pony, it seems like, the way it's currently set up. I mean, once you move on.
Yeah. There's no way to directly link to a page in the comic. There's no way to bookmark it.
Honestly, I'm not sure why you would link to one page in this comic, you know? I mean, that's something that's definitely true for, let's say, you know, when there's a gag comic and one particular day has one particular joke. But This is a one-shot comic. I can't think of one panel in here that I was thinking, oh man, I want to link to this one.
Oh no. But I mean, that's because it is a one-shot comic instead of something that would be ongoing. And if you were to try to apply this technology to other web comics, you might have a lot of problems in that respect.
Well,
the load time is painful as well.
So this isn't the first comic like this. There's been a couple HTML5 comics that try and make more of an experience out of the process, and they all tend to fall in the same kind of vein, which is a one-shot, hey, look, we're showing off this thing and this technology. But they kind of get some notice. They never seem to stick around. Is this kind of thing going to really propel the community forward at all of comics? In any way? Is it influential in any way? Is it going to become popular in any way? Or is it just kind of a neat trick? Is this the 3D glasses like comic of its time?
This structure, it is just a neat trick. The thing about it is less irritating and less of a demand on your processor than the Flash and other motion comics. So I could envision someone making a more traditional webcomic format using some of the tricks in here. So I think it could be put to use if someone thought about it a little bit more. This one is an advertisement for Internet Explorer and Tron. It's a joint advertisement.
Gotcha. All right. Well, speaking of which, There's an article on Topless Robot about the best motion comics, which I hate motion comics. I'm sorry, I do.
Yeah.
Quick poll.
Oh, no.
Vote. Okay. Love motion comics. Love them or hate them, Eric.
Hate them.
define what a motion comic is, because there's a couple of different types of comics where there's, I mean, there's like darkbrain.com.
Putting it down for hate 'em.
Where there's darkbrain.com, which has basically things, objects and characters that will pop in the panels, and they also have audio to go with it if you'd like. And then there's ones where they actually have basically, it's like paper cutout animations where they make them look like they're walking or moving their hand or something like that.
Is there any versions of those that you like?
Yeah.
I don't mind the ones that pop in as they're telling the story. The moving ones are...
I don't mind isn't liking. That means it isn't irritating enough for you to leave the site. Is there any ones that you actually like that actually make the comic viewing experience better for you?
And we have our answer.
I don't know. I don't think there's any motion comics that I particularly hate. I don't particularly read any either, though. I don't mind them.
The difference in this case is likened to hate. I really think it is.
I just play the devil's advocate, dude.
No, but if the best you can say about it is I don't actually hate it. Yeah. That's not okay. A glowing advertisement.
I like some of the ones on Dark Brain. I will say
now,
that.
From the studio's perspective, I'm sure that motion comics seem like a great idea. Oh, it gives us the chance to take all this content we've already created, repurpose it, reuse it, whatever. But, God, they all just feel like bad, like documentaries of comics.
Mm.
You know, the way they're trying to pan through them and cheaply animate things. I mean, they all feel like a Ken Burns movie gone wrong. No? Just me?
Yes, no, I'm with you. Although I think Ken Burns movies are very enjoyable. It's the motion comics that try to use it as a selling point that makes it annoying.
Yeah, but they're just trying to utilize it. I think they're pushing it and trying to make it catch on in ways that it just hasn't. But yep. That being said, look at the number one on this site, this 10 best motion comic site. It's Axe Cop Episode 1. Axe Cop beats out every other professionally done, took a lot of time, took a lot of effort, took a lot of budget comic, and beat it with something that a guy put together by himself as a fan of Axe Cop.
Oh, that was the live action one, though, wasn't that?
That was live action.
Well, no, there is a live action one, but
it's on page two.
The best motion comics one is actually just a motion comic. It really is just from it. There is also Axe Cop live action. That exists, yes, but that is not what they're referring to in this particular thing. All right, well, go check out these and all the rest over at toplessrobot.com. There will be a link over at the Webcast Beacon, webcastbeacon.com, and in this news post.
We have a brand new listener in the chat room called Ink Outbreak. I just want to welcome you to the Webcast Beacon Network and the podcasts that we put out. Hope you stick around and enjoy what we got.
Are we going to do that for every single person?
No, he's been. This person's been talking a bit in the chat room, so I wanted to say hi.
See, I wanted to open up the chat room, but I didn't want the ad to start playing, and so I couldn't bring myself to do it. All right, well, we'll move right along. There's an article on GigaOM on the transparency of collaboration, which, while not at all about webcomics, is kind of an allegory and can easily be associated with collaborative webcomics, where they talk about transparency. When is it good? When is it bad? When is it too much or not enough? I think it's pretty easy to say. It's like any relationship. There are times where you should keep your mouth shut, and there are times where you shouldn't.
If you're going to hire an artist, if you're entering into a business relationship with your artist, in that you're paying them money and they are producing art, it is a very useful article.
Yes. So go check that out over at GigaOM. There's some pretty good stuff. We'll move on to the next one with that. Bitcoin Bitcoin, or is it Bitcoin? I thought it was Bitcoin. Yeah, it is Bitcoin. Okay. So Bitcoin is a new system of payment currency that exists only on the internet and is supposed to be untraceable and therefore kind of pseudo-like cash. And there's been some discussion about whether or not this could be solving the quote-unquote micropayments problem that's been discussed through webcomics. For those that aren't familiar, the idea of instead of paying $3 for a comic, you pay a cent or 2 cents or something like that every time you look at something or look at a bunch of something, and therefore would kind of spread out the payment into the more common viewing, as opposed to right now where you view a bunch of stuff for free and then maybe buy something at the end of that process. And there's some debate over whether or not Bitcoins can serve this purpose, though unfortunately there's also the first ever case of $500 approximately worth of Bitcoins being stolen, which makes for kind of an unfortunate tie-in. But what do you guys think? Bitcoins as a method?
Micropayments don't work because human brains don't work that way. I mean, I'm sorry.
I'm totally with you.
This is a really weird system for the fact that thinking that if you just ask for a penny, everyone will give it. And it's not true. If someone's willing to give you something, they're willing to go up to, you know, about $4 or $5. You know, if I decide to give someone something, a penny or a couple of bucks is the same to me. If I don't want to give them money, go ahead.
Here's the most common example I can think of. Homeless people or anyone on the street that is asking for money. Okay, they could be homeless, they could be a musician, they could be a street performer, whatever. 200 people maybe view them in asking for money, whether they're playing something or dancing or just standing there and, you know, waving a cup in your face. Most people just walk by, but every once in a while, a person puts in a dollar. I think that is, and for them, that's not a micropayment, that's a full-on payment, because lots of other people are experiencing whatever it is they have to offer for free, and then every once in a while someone's paying for it.
Yeah, has
anyone ever made the pet street peddler analogy before? Because I really like that now.
Yes.
I think we use that. Oh, damn. And here I was.
It has been used in the debate. But, yeah. Micropayments just don't work because, frankly, if you give them just a penny, you feel like an ass. I mean, it feels worse to give someone a penny than to give them nothing. If you just say, oh, I'm not going to give anything, then that's fine. You made that decision. If you give them a penny, you go, oh, man.
They're not your meter.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's an article over on Fleen that links to 5 other articles on Fleen that you can check out if you're interested in the micropayments and Bitcoin debate. You can check out a link over at webcastbeacon.com.
Right.
And with that, we're going to transition here into a break. We're going to be taking a quick break. You will barely notice the difference, those of you listening at home. But for us, we're going to go out, get sauced, coke and hookers, and come right back. So see you in a couple days, folks. No, stick around. We'll be right back.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
This episode of the Webcomic Beacon newscast is brought to you by Cooking... Shit.
Well done.
I hardly ever do this live.
Who's it brought to you by?
This episode of the Webcomic Beacon newscast is brought to you by the webcomics What's Cooking? Feeding Families City by City. It is something that's been put together by TGT Media, of which several, a dozen or so well, actually, over 47 creators of webcomics have gotten together to basically make comic recipes, like actual recipes for people to use. And the proceeds go to Feeding America and Food Banks, Feeding America and Food Banks Canada. The book just costs $15 and is a 100-page full-color cookbook that has custom comics and a variety of creators. Brian Anderson of Dog Eat Doug, David Reddick of Legend of Bill, Chu from Slightly Damned, and 47 other creators. They ship all over the world. In North America, shipping is $6.95. So go ahead and check that out at webcomiccookbook.org for your copy and to help out feeding people today.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon. Did you miss us? I know I missed you. Those Coke and Hookers, man, they were great. Sorry you missed out. Maybe next time. But speaking of none of those things, there's an article over on GigaOM about the state of the ebook lending market, which is growing. And there's a link to a bunch of current articles and, oh shoot, words failing. Current services that offer such things as Lendle and Book Lending and LendMe that will let you lend books to your ebook reader, whether it's a Kindle or what have you. So why exactly does this relate to webcomics, Eric?
It doesn't directly, although this is yet again another service that comics will be on pretty soon with the growth of color readers and libraries stocking more comics in their catalogs. They're going to start lending comic books as well as other things. So
How about this? How many comics are currently on ebooks that we know about?
How many comics are on ebooks? Not a lot, because there's been a lot of resistance to it. There are a number of people who actually web comics who make comics for ebooks. I know for one, Sheldon has a format for ebooks, and a lot of web comics make PDFs that could be included on the ebooks. They aren't going through the library market, and this is what these ebook lenders are for. So there's a bit of a disconnect from webcomic to library, which should happen because this is exactly what the type of material libraries are looking for, but there hasn't been that connection yet.
Gotcha.
So this is just a piece of a puzzle and an interesting article. It's not strongly related to webcomics.
All right. Well, with that, we'll move on straight into the next one, which is on social networking trends and the amount of people that actually lurk versus like versus comment on websites. There's been studies done, in this case, an article on allthingsd.com that discusses how many people are actually using Facebook and the like button and things like it. And this links to a review from Pew Internet and American Life Project that has done a lot of research saying that the act of contributing a status update is an infrequent activity for most users. A majority of Facebook users, 56%, update their status less than once per week. Only 15% of Facebook users update their status at least once per day. Nearly one in six, which is about 16%, have never updated their status. So I take this and all the other things they discuss in their article to pretty much say that when my comic has 50 people liking it, that 50 people is pretty much representative of a much larger populace. About 10%, you know, or 100 times, I'm sorry, 10 times that amount, right? I mean, that's about breaking down.
Pretty much. And it's a demographic that is skewed more female than male, strangely. So it's the people who like you are more likely to be women than men. And there's a couple other demographic information in there, but yeah, it's an interesting article just to know who will like a certain comic, because that is free advertising. So that is important.
Yeah. And being able to understand your audience can be really important as well. Maybe you have a particularly talkative audience, or you've been able to cultivate that. Or maybe you are the opposite. Maybe you have a rather quiet audience for your audience size. And articles like this, and especially the kind of links that you can follow through and the breakdowns, can actually help you learn a bit about that and how to cultivate a different experience if your current audience in terms of community is not what you're wanting from your website. So go check that out over at allthingsd.com. Moving into the next article here in our educational section, we have Brian Wood's artwork available for download. Brian Wood has done a ton of covers for array of comics, I should say. And now on his Tumblr is offering the entirety of a 132-page book available. It's called Public Domain 2. And it's about 115 megabytes and has some beautiful, beautiful artwork. Do you guys have a chance to take a look at it?
I think it's interesting because it also shows sort of his process. It'll show beginning stages of art to end stages of art. So it's kind of a cool book.
Yeah, he does a great job of really layering and texturing in his artwork that I think, you know, has a very distinct style that is maybe very different than a lot of people might be used to seeing. So definitely worth checking out. And it's been pretty popular for him to do this for him, though I guess if he's getting jobs doing lots of covers for professional books, he probably doesn't have much trouble with that. But still, hey, more power to him, and be sure to go check it out. It's over at brianwood.tumblr.com. You can check it out there. And he actually posts some cool stuff on Tumblr, so go check that as well. You know, you can take a break from stupid things on Tumblr to go look at something useful. Just for a minute.
Why would I do that?
Why would anyone, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, now over into our discussion section. Well, I guess the whole show is the discussion section. But over in Malaysia, there is a cartoon that has caused a lot of a stir over in, actually, Kuala Lumpur. I'll be honest, I'm not fully versed in this article. Eric, could you help flesh it out a little bit?
Okay, this was actually tied into the Scott Adams thing in the beginning, because what we have over in Malaysia is the exact opposite of a cartoon coming out criticizing basically the police there for turning a blind eye to rape, blaming the victim and simply saying, you know, it's your fault for being raped. And this cartoon criticized it, and the Malaysian government came down on them, and they are now in a ton of trouble for this. So this was an interesting counterpoint to the Scott Adams piece, where people are actually criticizing rape in the society and getting pounded. And
now, unfortunately, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, also mentioned today,
yep,
not actually working internationally at this moment. So, yeah, these people I'm looking for the names of the actual artists involved. Do they mention it in the story?
No, they just mentioned the newspaper. I think the name of the artist was kept private because it was sort of a dangerous situation for them.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So the newspaper involved is the Utusan Malaysia. And the government's asking for a public apology, and they're having none of it. Basically, it's pretty rough stuff. But it's nice to see that cartoonists are trying to make a difference all over the world. So go check it out. This article over at found on comicsreporter.com, but linking over to the MalayanInsider.com, and you can find out more about this story as it develops. Moving on to our next article, the Smithsonian, specifically their blog section, has seen it fit to interview webcomics creator Ryan North of Dinosaur Comics. Now, the article itself is kind of a breakdown that takes a bit of a we don't know anything about webcomics approach. Webcomics may be a small genre, but a few have risen to widespread popularity in web culture, including XKCD, Index, The Oatmeal, and Dinosaur Comics, also known as Quants. This last one is an odd fit. While it features dinosaurs, the jokes rarely touch on paleontology, and they border on absurd. And it goes on from there.
I love how they say, compared to XKCD, Dinosaur Comics is an odd fit.
I think all of those are an odd fit. Look at
all of them are bizarre.
So this is the Smithsonian's perspective. This is specifically from a series called Dinosaur Tracking, where paleontology meets pop culture. So that's kind of the reference that brings it in. But okay, so I'm going to include a list of webcomics that are the webcomics out there. I'm going to now give you a list. And that list is going to consist of four things. And the four things I decide to mention are a stick figure comic, a chart comic, a crudely drawn... I'm annoyed about something comic. That's the oatmeal. And dinosaur comics.
Yeah.
Are any of those really... Those are all the non-traditional stuff, right? I mean, none of those are the penny arcades, the PVPs, the kind of quote-unquote artfully drawn stuff. You know what I mean? The stuff where people spend a whole lot of time on the artwork.
Yes, but I mean, that's the tradition. I mean, let's face it. If you opened up the Sunday newspaper section and looked at the comics in there, they're not really well drawn. I mean, if you're going to be 100% honest, a lot of the comics in your newspaper are really crude. And it's one of these things that the pop appeal sort of thing is not based on your artwork. It's based on your content. And it's based on your novelty. So these ones are big because they are novel. And the penny arcades are big because they attacked gamer culture. And this is sort of the lesson that you can sort of take away from that, is that novelty or, you know, this attaching to a very popular cultural icon can get you noticed. And art doesn't matter in these types of comics. But, yeah, it's a weird interview.
Actually, it's a rather normal interview. It's a rather mundane interview. They say, here are the questions from the interview. Why dinosaurs? Have you learned about dinosaurs while doing the comic? What's your inspiration for keeping the art static across all the comics? If you were to change the art and mix things up, what dinosaur would you add? Okay, that's the most interesting question. They go downhill from here. Where do you get your ideas from? They do note that that's a pedestrian question, but they still ask it.
Yeah.
What did you do before you started doing dinosaur comics? Which comics, web comics, do you read? And do you foresee any changes to the strip anytime soon? Those are the questions of the comic. The most interesting one was, if you change the artwork, what dinosaur would you bring in?
Right. But also keep in mind, this is a blog about dinosaurs. So they are focusing on their interests.
Alrighty. Well, it's still nice to see him getting some coverage, and his press picture makes him look like he survived the apocalypse. So good for Ryan North. He's a great-natured guy. So there we go. All right, we'll move on to... Our tidbits of the week, because I know we're kind of running out of time here. So, bad news. We covered Peanut Twitter last week. Unfortunately, Peanut Twitter is no longer with us already. It burned so bright and has been taken away almost as quickly.
It's your fault. You mentioned it.
I know. I mentioned it and it died. Peanut Twitter from their own Twitter feed, it says, peanuttwitter.com has been removed by Tumblr due to an Iconics Inc. claim that it violates the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah.
And the Iconics Inc., by the way, owns a lot of brands. They're the Iconics brand group. They are on Twitter and have 24 followers. Even though they own like a lot of really big brands like Echo and Zoo York and big stuff. I'm not actually sure why they decided to do this. Like, they really just peed on our parade.
Yeah, but they created the account to complain.
Right.
The Iconics Twitter account was created specifically to complain about Peanuts Twitter.
Yeah, and there's obviously been a lot of backlash over this. And It's caused, well, a fair amount of issues. Luckily, Three Nuts still exists. We covered Three Nuts a while back. The idea of taking out the last panel of Three Nuts, Peanuts. That's still available on Tumblr. In fact, I got talking to at Peanut Twitter about it, of all things.
Well, now that you mentioned it on the show, they're going to be going after Three Nuts. I mean,
we've already mentioned it once, if it still exists.
No, but now they're on Twitter, so now they're paying attention. Obviously, they're listening to the webcomic Beacon. How else would this have happened?
Clearly.
Well, we already know that NPR is listening to our stories.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So why not them, too? Anyway, we are sad to see it go, but the guy that did Peanut Twitter is also in other places, and if you go to his Twitter feed, you can follow it to other things that he's been doing. And there's an article that's just recently gone up. It's called R.I. Peanut Twitter. R.I. Peanut Twitter. It's been roughly 24 hours since the Peanut takedown. It's been an emotional time, and he kind of goes on and he laments and talks about how, I don't know how Garfield, minus Garfield, Nietzsche Family Circus, Dysfunctional Family Circus, Three Nuts, and whoever else does this sort of thing, get away with it. If you enjoy what they do, however, maybe it's best to let them fly under the radar. Hope that covers things. 5 cents, please. So go check out. It's kind of an emotional post and kind of an unfortunate one, but worth checking out. Honestly, I don't think we knew that was there previously, but it's a good one. We'll make sure it winds up in the feed. So, okay, we're wrapping up the show here, so we'll kind of rapid fire a few more. There's an article over on goodcomics.comicbookresources.com with over a month's worth of comics ideas. You can check that out. The Guardian newspaper puts the online business first is an article that I don't even have open.
Yeah, just to cover this real quick, the Guardian newspaper said, we're not going to focus on our print business anymore. We're going to focus primarily on our digital business. So they are the first traditional newspaper to transition over to a purely digital business. And that's how they're going to make their money and where they're going to focus from this point on. So it is, again, this transition to a digital environment.
Cool. There's also an article over at the Via Bleeding Cool over at the New York Times with some really neat discussion about comics as therapy techniques, which is something that the Create a Comic Project has been working on for a while with teaching, but it's nice to see it show up in another environment. There's also an auction to be in a comic about killing Osama bin Laden. Available with an article via Bleeding Cool.
This is five times kinds of wrong. It's just awful.
The character gets to kill a mutant lizard Osama bin Laden. That's all that needs to say. Also, a link to Transformers as drawn by an 8-year-old Brian Lee O'Malley.
Of Scott Pilgrim fame.
Of Scott Pilgrim fame, yes. That was cool to see. Dr. McNinja has been turned into a drink recipe. Thank God that exists.
Dr. McNinja gave us the Christopher Hastings of Dr. McNinja gave us a drink recipe. Oh. It's not a Dr. McNinja drink recipe.
It doesn't even feature get drunk and then read Dr. McNinja, I guess. So what's the drink called? I'm looking for the actual drink.
It's a ginger cocktail. I don't remember the exact name of it.
The ginger limit is what it's called. Yeah. 2 ounces of ginger infused vodka, 1 ounce of ginger liqueur, juice of half a lime, ice, and ginger beer. Sounds tasty. Might actually be good for the hangover I currently have, so that's fair. All right. Do you want to take this one on Cat and Girl?
Yep, same idea. This was made for the same Saver magazine. Went to these webcomic creators and requested that they make drink recipes for them. So Cat and Girl is another drink, another webcomic creator who made a chocolate ice cream drink recipe.
Nice.
And I don't see the ingredients, but you can look at any links.
There's also a link over to Comics Alliance with some really cool DC Universe, if they were existed around the year 1000, which I mostly like that the Green Lantern is kind of this Buddha monk figure. That was pretty epic. The rest is meh.
It was a very cool take on it.
Yeah. And then finally we have the artist statement generator, which I actually saw a few times, kind of was making the round. I'm trying to look for the web address. It was found via Lizard at Lizard Beth. But that's... the actual website, I'm pretty sure it's like Artie. Oh, it's the Artie Bollocks generator. And it gives you things like, my work explores the relationship between postmodern discourse and recycling culture. Or my work explores the relationship between new class identities and multimedia experiences. And then goes on with influences and ever since I was this and that. And it's pretty funny.
That was a surprisingly good job of it.
if you're ever looking for some Artie Bollocks, this is a good source for it. And it's sponsored by an event apart, and they're pretty awesome. So, and it's copy and pastable, so thank God that exists. I know some grad students who could really use a hand with that. God, we missed the... I'm so sorry. We missed the... there was an article we missed, and now I'm looking to try and find it. And of course, I never will. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? No.
The article you missed was Warren Ellis's Invisible Text in Comics.
Ah, yes. That wasn't even the one I was thinking of. But yeah, we did.
Okay. So that was one article you missed. We also skipped over the whole.
Should be making superhero webcomics. That's the one I was looking for. Yeah. Ah, yes. Over at Comics Alliance. Is a good article. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. God, I feel like I'm under the wire with everything I'm saying right now. But no, it's a really cool article that basically talks about how all these web comics are making somewhat use of this property, but actual comics haven't even tried to kind of launch into that market.
Mm.
And a bunch of references therein, more references to Dr. Ninja.
Well, good thing we have all the notes.
I mean,
we have all the articles available on the blog. Once this show goes into MP3 form, so you can catch up on everything in the blog post that we put up.
Okay, well, let's
expand a little bit more on that just before you end up. It basically goes through and compares the numbers that DC and Marvel sell to the top numbers of top web comics, and says that DC and Marvel could make more money if they were to go over to a full webcomic format without the crazy Flash viewers and all of the paranoia trying to keep people from sharing or taking their comics.
I don't know about you guys. I'm kind of glad they don't. I'm kind of glad that we, the little guys, are able to do something better than them.
Well, yeah. I mean, their incompetence is what has allowed webcomics to grow as a medium, but at the same time, you know, you realize that if they got their act together, they could do a lot of fun things.
Fact. All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap up this spectacular show we've done today. And so I hope you guys have enjoyed listening. Thank you all to everyone in the chat room that's been able to come out. Marshmallow Kitty, Ink Outbreak, Tree Lobsters, and the rest that have all stopped by. Thank you all so much. If you get a chance, please go visit our website, webcastbeacon.com, where you can see all the articles we talked about this week. And also, please, if you find an article that you want us to discuss, send it on over to us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com, and we will talk about it next week's show. With that, I've been your host,
Ross.
And we will credit you. Sorry. Yes, of course. That's a good point. With me this week has been Fess. Thank you, Fess, for everything you've done, as always, and for laughing at the right moments. And Eric, keeping it real and providing all the articles. Thank you again so much. Eric, again, his website is exiern.com, and Fess is psiwebcomic.com. So we hope you guys have enjoyed the show. We will see you next week. We also record, like we were saying, on Ustream live Sundays, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Come and check us out sometime. For those of you that are online, stick around. The Tropecast is up next, right?
Nope. The Webcomic Beacon core program is up next.
Oh, the core program is up next.
Watercoloring.
Yay, watercoloring! All right, well, I'm going to go and do laundry. So I hope you guys have all had a wonderful time listening to the show. We will see you next time. Peanut butter and jelly. Talk to you later.